In my last sermon, we spoke about the roles that God established at the creation for men and women. As I said, they're laid out for us in the book of Genesis, and the rest of the Bible expounds on them in different places, and so you find Paul and others elaborating on these things in order that we can understand them not only in their physical reality, but also their spiritual implications. And they are roles that we as Christians need to be familiar with. Sadly, in the roles of men and women as laid out in the Bible are politically incorrect. So to lay things out, what's that? Pull this down. Okay, is that working better? Okay. So anyway, in the 21st century, these particular roles, as they're laid out in the Bible, are considered to be politically incorrect. However, as you look at them in the Bible, they are timeless roles, roles that are not only going to be found in this age, but they're also going to be the roles that God lays out and teaches people in the world to come. It's not some standard that's going to change with the return of Christ. It's going to be a standard that will be laid out for everyone, and there are specific reasons why God laid it out the way that he did. So in my last sermon, we talked about God's intended role for men. And we saw that God wants men to take on the role that Christ had of serving the church and giving himself for the church, and that is the approach that God expects men to take in relation to their wives, to love and cherish them and give for them just as Christ gave for the church. So we were not able to finish the sermon, so we have to come back and look at God's intended role for women. Now, the primary thing that we're going to look at, it's not the only thing we're going to look at, but we're going to look at what God explains about the role of the woman in light of submissiveness. God's instruction is that the wife is to be submissive to the husband. And all the guys are saying, yeah, baby, I love that. But it's not what you think it is. As we explained last time, being submissive is not just you are the king and she's the peasant and you rule with an iron hand. That's not what that's all about at all. Especially when you are expected to fulfill your role just as Christ fulfilled it for the church. That is the example. That is the standard that we all must strive for. So, you know, for many capable women, they hear the word submissive and immediately they find that hard to deal with because they think of being submissive as being inactive, insignificant, and something of a doormat. But to God, submission means something else that's far different from that. The definition of submissive is as follows. To be submissive means to yield humble and intelligent obedience to an ordained power or authority, something that is yielded, something that is given. Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 5. That's where it talks about the roles for men and women in a New Testament context. And it's interesting what it says in Ephesians 5 before it ever gets into the roles of husbands and wives. Ephesians chapter 5, let's look at verse 17. It says here, therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. In essence, it says it is unwise to not understand God's will and more than anything, not to be in harmony with God's will. And so he goes on and he talks about different ways that we fulfill that will. And he gets down to verse 21, which says, submitting to one another in the fear of God. So we are to submit to one another in the fear of God. That is God's will for every human being. There are times when my responsibility is to be submissive. Everybody is submissive to someone in some way, and it is something that God expects of all of us. We are to yield ourselves, and it's not something that God makes us do. It's not just something we do because we're compelled to do it. It's something that we must be prepared to do, and we have to realize it's not degrading to be submissive. It is to, as you are submissive in whatever role you're in, it is to God's glory. And when the church is submissive to Christ, Christ, it is to God's glory and to Jesus Christ's glory. God did not, you know, as God set things up the way that he did, God did not have a grudge against women when he established this order. He established this order for the protection of women and harmony in the home. And God means for women to be sheltered from the rough encounters that are common to this world. And as you think about it, one of the things you often hear is that marriage is a 50-50 proposition. Now, that's something that human beings have come up with, but that's not biblical. The roles are as God defined them, and a husband is to be a husband 100% of the time, and a wife is to fulfill her role 100% of the time. So I'm a husband, so I'm to be 100% 100% of the time, and my wife is a wife, and she is to fulfill that responsibility 100% of the time as well. Now, you don't do both. It doesn't work well when you're trying to do both. And God has given wives the opportunity to choose freely whether they will be submissive or not. It's a choice. It is a choice. And the example for, just as the example for the husband is Jesus Christ, the example of submissiveness is Jesus Christ as well. Jesus Christ is the perfect example of submissiveness. That example is laid out for us and explained quite well by the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 2. We're not going to turn there, but many of you are familiar with the fact that Jesus Christ was God. He dwelled with God, as John 1 tells us. He was an eternal spirit being, unlimited, all-powerful, only subject to the Father. So he's inhabiting eternity, but the plan requires for someone to come into the world and to lay down their lives for sin. And it has to be somebody that would pay the price fully. And Jesus Christ was willing to do that. He was willing to submit to God the Father and fulfill the great purpose of allowing man to be saved from his sins, to redeem mankind. So Christ submitted himself to God the Father and God's purpose, and the Father sent Jesus Christ. Now let's go to John chapter 8, which explains a little bit about Christ's approach and Christ's recognition of the approach that he is to take. John chapter 8, verses 28 and 29. John chapter 8, verses 28 and 29. Then Jesus said to them, "When you lift up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am He, and that," or better said, "I am." That is, he's telling people exactly who he was. He's the eternal that is that you find in the Old Testament, and he's that same being. "And that I do nothing of myself. I'm not doing this just on my own. But as my Father taught me, I speak these things." I'm here as God's representative. I am here sent by the Father, he says in verse 29. "And he who sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone, for I always do those things that please him." Christ gave his life in voluntary submission to the Father in everything. And the submission that he offered up was freely given. And it's important to understand the principle of submission. As men, we are to be submissive to Jesus Christ. And wives are to be submissive to their husbands. And it's not something that Christ has not already done himself and gives us a perfect example of what submission is all about. In one sense, this principle of submission is exemplified by the Father in being willing to listen to us. Why should he humble himself and listen to you and me? But he is willing to listen to each and every one of us, to give us audience as we offer up our prayers to him. Let's go to Romans chapter 6, which tells us something about submission. It is something freely given. Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6, beginning in verse 16. Romans chapter 6, verse 16. It says, "Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey? whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness. So to whom will you submit? We have all submitted to sin. Freely we have submitted to sin. And now we are living a different life, and God says we are to freely and willingly submit to God in obedience. Verse 17, but God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. So God opened your mind to see the truth. You came to understand that truth, and then you said, this is right. This is what I must do. And we willingly submitted to that other path. It's a matter of submissiveness that we all have to undertake. We are all to be submissive to the great God. And we become obedient by choice. We become obedient by choice. Verse 18 says, and having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. Bond slaves. We chose to be God's bond slaves, to serve Him, to submit to Him, and to His will. And that's something we all have to do, whether we're male or female. Now, as women here, that they're to be submissive to their husbands, many times they see this as their being hamstrung and having no opportunity to do anything. So basically you're stuck at home, fixing meals, taking care of children, and there's nothing else that you can do. But you might look at Proverbs 31. And as you look at what Proverbs 31 tells us about a woman's role and what she can achieve, that's in the context of being submissive. So she's able to achieve all of the things that you find there while being submissive to her husband. This the Proverbs 31 gives us a picture of a very capable wife, a woman who is able to accomplish much. As you see from, we're not going to turn there and read it, but it describes a woman who's capable, a woman who's ambitious, a woman who's willing, kind, wise, trustworthy, cheerful, providing for her household. She knows her worth. She knows her value to the family. She uses her intelligence for good purpose. You know, where physical strength is needed, she uses her physical strength. And she's God-fearing in her character. And she makes abundance for her husband, for her children, for the poor, for the needy. This is a capable woman who is rightly approaching marriage and is fulfilling her role as a mate to her husband. And what triggers all of this creative effort, is because the husband is there with a whip in his hand, standing there, you will do this and you will do it the way that I want. Is that how this is? That's not what's described there. If that's what it takes for your wife to be submissive, or you will only be submissive if somebody's standing over you with a whip, then you've missed the whole point of this. You've missed the whole point. It is a husband who expresses unqualified appreciation for his wife and opens the way for her, yes, to be submissive, but to accomplish all that she has the potential to accomplish. Her husband praises her. It says in Proverbs 31, many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Where a wife's submission comes from a harsh demand from the husband, God's order has been overthrown. That's not the way God laid it out, nor the way that God wants it. The whole idea of submissiveness in the context of it being forced and demanded is not within what God laid out. That's mere human authority. And God's idea and the way God laid it out is undermined and isn't found there at all. But where a husband fulfills his role in God's order, which is to love his wife, to cherish his wife, to lay down his life for her, and not be harsh with her, which Paul addresses in Colossians 3, verse 9, then the wife's submission becomes a fountain of mutual love and devotion, a thing of surpassing moral and spiritual beauty. Frankly, you know, for a wife to be submissive, if you are fulfilling your role as a husband, then it makes it easier for her to submit. Because she knows that you love her, you cherish her, that you want her to accomplish everything that she can accomplish. And she's willing to do it because you're working together in harmony, and she knows the love that you have for her. And if you're being loved and supported and cared for, it's a lot easier to be submissive than if somebody's just demanding it of you. So the point is that this is something that it's important for us to understand. And in a world, a woman is subject to physical attack. There's a reason why God laid things out this way. A husband is to be her provider. He's to be her protector. Now, those things are politically incorrect, because how dare you open a door for a woman? That's just completely dismissive. So we can just move on as men to shove them out of the way and beat them into the building or whatever we want to do. That's not what God wanted. There was a recognition at one time where a woman is to be respected. A woman is to be protected. Did any of you growing up ever hear the words from your parents or your father, especially, "You don't hit girls"? Did any of you ever hear that? That was pretty common. I'm not sure anybody says that anymore. You don't hit girls. So that was inappropriate when I was a kid. It's still inappropriate. There's no excuse for that. But, you know, we live in a much different world than 50 years ago. But it is inappropriate to hit girls. It's something that we should teach our young men, to respect them, to honor them in the right way. So, as you see this, a wife is not, as I talked about last time, a wife is not as physically strong as a man. That's just a physical reality and is something that we have to recognize. And part of the reason why God set up things the way that He set them up is because that's a reality you have to face. And as you face that, you're going to act accordingly. Up until recent times, every society understood this. A woman's vulnerability does not stop at the physical level. It also includes vulnerability at the emotional, psychological, and spiritual level. In all of these areas, a woman needs a husband's authority and protection. And in a world, if the world comes after her in some way, then the husband is the one who is to intervene and watch out for her and protect her. He's to step in. Her husband has to fight certain battles on her behalf. A husband represents her to the world, and he deals with such issues, and her shoulders aren't that broad. So the husband intervenes on her behalf, recognizing that not that she's women are totally incapable, but there are things she just shouldn't have to deal with. And it's the man's responsibility to deal with them. And this all leads to an idea that we have to recognize that we live in a bad world. We live in a world that is pretty bad, and it's one of the major reasons why God established the family in the order that He did. We live in a bad world. So, a couple of things that we have to think about here is, not only are men to protect their wives physically, you are to watch out for her, and if need be, you are to lay down your life for your wife and protect her. That's your job as a man. That's your job as a husband. And a couple of other things we have to realize is, women also need to be protected from the emotional attacks from their children. Will your kids ever try to rule over you? Will that ever happen? It most assuredly does. There comes a point in a family, as your boys get to a certain age, if mom's home, they reach the point where they think, you know, I can roll mom. I can outdo her. And they will try. So if that's happening in your home, you need to tell your husband, you know, the boys are kind of getting, you know, being disrespectful. The boys are not doing what I ask them to do. And what should you do as a husband? You need to have a chat with the boys. Because when you're not there as the husband, you're away at the job, and the wife is watching the children, guess who's in charge? Your wife is in charge, and the boys are to be obedient. And you, as the husband, cannot allow the boys or your children in general to usurp the mother's authority. It's hard enough to raise kids and keep everything under control, and that's something she has to be able to do and feel, you know what? My husband loves me, cherishes me, values me, and if there's a problem, I know he will back me up, that he'll help me in dealing with this. So you don't just say to her, it's your problem. You're watching the kids. No, you're the one that's to intervene there. That's your job. But I don't really want to do that. Sorry, it's still your job. They're your kids, and that's your responsibility. So the husband who protects his wife from the discourtesies and abuses of children instills in them a respect for a mother, a wife. And that's what they're to grow up with. So when they're married and they have their wife, they will respect her and honor her as they should. And that's taught in the home. This, together with the husband's and father's example of considerateness and courtesy toward his wife, is part of the legacy that a father passes on to his sons and daughters. You set the example for them. By your example, you teach them how a husband should treat his wife, and your daughters will see, you know, this is the way it's to be. And your sons will see, this is the way it's to be. And they're all like little video cameras watching what you do and seeing how you do it. And then they take that information and apply it in their lives. Another thing that we have to realize as far as women is concerned is women are subject to spiritual attack. They are subject to spiritual attack. That's what we find in the Garden of Eden. Where did Satan attack? Did he attack Adam? He did not. He focused his attack at Eve. And a husband is to stand as a shield to protect his wife in circumstances like this. Adam should have intervened and said, Eve, I'm going to take this. I will deal with Satan. That was his job, his responsibility, and he failed in that. He should have stopped it, and he should have stepped in because he knew what was right. So when Satan told him, you're not going to surely die if you eat of this, he would have said, that's not right, and pointed them in the right direction, but he did not do what he was supposed to. That's the example there. He failed as a husband. And God laid things out the way that he did and wants us to follow that because it is the way that it works best for everyone. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. Now, we see the order of things in Genesis, but that's not something that is just in the book of Genesis. It's found in Ephesians, and we also see it here in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. It says there, but I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ. The head of every man is Christ, 1 Corinthians 11, 3. The head of woman is man. That's the way God laid it out in Genesis. Paul is only quoting the way God laid it out here in the book of Corinthians. And the head of Christ is God. So Christ is submissive to the Father. He has a head. And you also have the man is under Christ and the woman is under the man. That there's an order here in the way that all of this is explained to the church. And you have to realize the Corinthian church had very little background in the Bible. It's primarily a Gentile church. You had Jews in the congregation there, but they weren't familiar with this. So Paul is explaining the order of things to the people in the Corinthian church. And God laid this out, and it's unwise for us to violate this. Let's go to verses 4 and 5. It says, "Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head." So you may say, well, what is this talking about as far as covering is concerned? What's Paul addressing? Verse 5, it says, "But every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for that is one and the same as if her head were shaved." So, you know, it's both men and women are told to pray and to prophesy, and it talks about different roles in those verses. And the way that this talking about head coverings is talking about being under authority. And a man's condition represents who he's under, and the woman's condition represents who he's under. And what is it talking about here? If you go down to verse 14 in chapter 11, it's not talking about hats or veils or any of that kind of thing. It's talking about a specific item here, which verse 14 tells us. Verse 14 says, "Does not even nature itself teach you that if man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him?" And then verse 15, "But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering." So it's talking about coverings, and the covering is one's hair. And a man is to have shorter hair, a woman is to have longer hair, and it's representative of being under authority. The man being under the authority of Christ, his hair is shorter. The woman having longer hair that is appropriate for a woman represents that she's under the authority of her husband. That's what it represents. Chapter 11, verse 6 says, "For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. For it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved. Let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man." So all Paul is saying is hair length has to do with being in submission. That man's hair is a little bit longer, indicating he is in submission to Christ. The woman's hair being an appropriate length to indicate that she is under her husband. Chapter 11, verse 8. "For if man is not from woman, but woman from man," that's how it was in the book of Genesis, "nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels." So it's talking about angels here, and so why does Paul introduce angels? Well, he introduces angels, and he's talking about specific angels when he mentions them. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 5 tells us that the world to come is not going to be subject to angels. Whether you know it or not, the world in which we live right here, right now, is subject to angels. Satan is the god of this world. He's the prince of the power of the air. And there are principalities and powers we can't see, but they rule this world. And the world is subject to them. Now, Christ is the head of the church, and he rules in the church. And he also rules any other place that he needs to intervene. But at this time, God is allowing Satan to be in that position of power, but that's going to come to an end. That's going to come to an end. The angels still rule. And the problem is, why is that important? Because when you step outside of the order that God has given to you, then you have stepped out of that order and you become subject to angels. Who rules this world? The demons. And you basically have stepped outside of God's order and you make yourself vulnerable. You make yourself vulnerable. And you stepped outside of what God had given as a natural order. An order that should have been clear to her, but an order that she obviously chose not to follow. She stepped outside of it, and she should have understood, I shouldn't step out of this because I was created from Adam. So what are the implications of this? What are the implications of this? Let's take a look at that. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 2 and look at verse 8. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 8. It says in verse 8, I desire therefore that the men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. So, as a man, what are you to do? It says, men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. That is the thing that men should do at the top of their priority list. They have their responsibility is tied to being closely tied in with their head so that they can be subject to him and honor him in all that they do. And why is Paul saying this? He's telling the men, this is what you do. Your job is to stay close to your head, Jesus Christ, and you do that through prayer, through study, and doing all of those things that allow you to stay close to your Savior and your head. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9, it says, in like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. And what it's saying is, how do women get around the bound that God has established? One of the primary ways that they do so is by accentuating their looks, the different features that God has given them, because they know that that gives them a certain degree of power. And God said, don't misuse the blessings that God has given to you. And what's more important is not the power you can attain by doing that. What's more important is by your being rightly submissive and expressing that in your attitude and your whole approach, which the Bible describes for us. It's basically telling us to stay within what the order that God has established. And then here comes the hard part. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, it says, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. And I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority over a man, but to be in silence. So does that mean you never speak up, you never say anything, you just sit there silently and you never ever participate? That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about in the church context of church and services and those responsibilities within what we're doing right now, a woman is to be silent. And but women can serve in other ways in the church. They can be a part of teaching Sabbath classes and those kinds of things. But in the context of church services themselves, that's where a woman is to be in silence. And it talks about that in 1 Corinthians 14 as well, but we're not going there. We shouldn't, and you know, these are difficult verses, especially living in the 21st century. Because you all hear this, you're like, what are you talking about? This is the 21st century. How can you even allude to such things? Why would we even believe in this? All I'm doing is telling you what the Bible says, which may be hard to take, but it's a matter of understanding it and then acting in faith. And we are to, you know, a woman in church services is to be silent with all submission and teaching and the function in the body of Christ. And 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 12 says, and I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam, and he goes right back to Genesis. He says, for Adam was formed first, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. So Paul gives the reasons for what he said in verses 11 and 12. And this was established at the creation of the woman and the man and the woman. And it's something that's challenging, which we might take the time to think about and ask for God's help in understanding it. And the primary reason that God established the order is because we do live in a bad world. We do live in a bad world. And as you look at go back to Genesis, in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, after the sin has been committed, God says to the woman, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. So what's God telling her? He's telling her, you know what? You're not going to make it on your own. You already tried this, and unfortunately, you are no longer in the garden. You're going out into a bad world ruled by evil angels, and it's not going to work out well for you if you go outside of the order that I've established. Adam should have been your head before, and Adam is being your head is even more needed now. And why is that? For the simple reason, it's a dangerous world that I'm sending you out into. You're no longer going to be in the protected environment of the garden. You're out there, and you're going to have to make your way outside of that. That's how it's going to be. And if you want to make it, you're going to have to be submissive to your husband. That's the deal. And what does God say to Adam? Chapter 3, verse 17. Then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife, you didn't heed my voice, God, who told you what you were to do. You didn't heed my voice, you heeded your wife's voice, and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. As a result of this, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. And you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. In other words, God is telling Adam that life's going to be hard. You're going to have to work hard just to make it. No more of the easy life in the garden. You're outside the garden, and you're going to have to make it, and it's going to be a hard way for you. And God did this. God expelled them from the garden and told them these things and laid things out for them because outside the garden, they were separated from God. They could stay close to God, but if they chose not to, life was going to be hard. And they were going to suffer the consequences of that. And God wanted them to see the need to turn to Him. To see that, you know, apart from God, we aren't going to make it. And as we follow God, we're going to follow the order that He laid out for the man and the woman. The challenge for us as men is, will we do this? We talked about the things that a man were expected of a man. As I look at them in my own context, I say, you know what? I haven't lived up to that standard very well. Have I failed completely? No, but I've fallen far short of Jesus Christ. And as a woman, have you lived up to what God lays out for you? Are you willing to do that? There are blessings that come about as a result. And God is telling wives, if you step outside of the order that I've set up, there are consequences. There are consequences. And He brings up the issue of hair and hair length in 1 Corinthians 11 in order to emphasize how women can symbolize their stepping outside of the authority of the husband. You know, it's by, well, I'm going to shave my head off, all my hair off, or I'm going to burn my bra, or whatever it may be. There are various ways that women have said, I'm not going to be under the authority of a man. And there are problems when you follow that particular way. Now, as you think about the way that God laid things out, and talked about the woman having difficulties in childbirth, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 15 tells us something interesting in regard to the woman. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 15. It says, nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they, that is the women, continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. That is, her salvation, her well-being, if she does, it will be insured for her if she does that for which she was designed. You can't go beyond what God laid out. And, you know, it's as you do choose to go beyond it, it makes life harder. You might say, well, some people, obviously some people have done real well. But if you go outside of it, there are consequences to that, and God says, don't do it. Don't do it. God's intention is that a husband should stand between the wife and the world. He is to absorb the physical, emotional, and spiritual pressures which come against her. It is the husband, not the wife, who is primarily responsible for what goes on in the home, the community, and the church. So if your family is not doing so well, who's responsible? You, as the husband, are the responsible party. It is your job to go to your head and ask for the strength and the wisdom to do what's necessary to make repairs if they're necessary. And when a husband deserts this role, or when the wife usurps it, both the home and community outside the home suffer for it. That's one of the primary reasons why we have the havoc and the chaos in the world in which we live, because the family is not what it should be. In regard to salvation, I'm just going to read a couple of verses here. Galatians chapter 3, verses 27 and 28. Those verses say, "For as many of you as were baptized into Christ," that is, men and women, "as were baptized into Christ, have put on Christ. Both of you have the opportunity for salvation. You have the opportunity to come to repentance. You have the opportunity to be baptized. You have the opportunity for hands to be laid on you and to receive the Spirit of God, Christ in you, the hope of glory." Men and women both have that opportunity. As Paul goes on to say in verse 28, "There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." All of you, men and women, have the same opportunity for salvation. And you know what? There's coming a day when there will be a resurrection. And when that resurrection takes place, you are going to be a member of the family of God. You're not going to be a man. You're not going to be a woman. You are going to be a member of the family of God. And guess what? The ladies will be as much God as any and every man. You will all be God beings. You will all be part of God's family. And you will dwell with Him forever. Male and female is a part of this world, not the world to come. Now, some people have looked at these verses and seen them as making everybody equal. That's not what Paul is saying. Paul is saying, that it's not talking about society. It's talking about the church. It's talking about salvation. We're all equal under God when it comes to salvation. So there's no race. There's no ethnicity. There's no male or female. None of that. It's a matter we're all equal under God when it comes to salvation. So we're all equally going to be saved. And let's just look at one final aspect of submission. Now, what happens if your husband is making the worst, has come up with the worst idea in the known universe, and he tells you about it? What are you to do? You're to sit there and be submissive, you know. Isn't that right? That's not right. That's not accurate at all. Just quoting from the book that I quoted from the first sermon about the Christian family, it says, "In all of this, however, it is important to distinguish between submissiveness and servility. The wife who sees that her husband's judgment is wrong or unwise should tell him so with all respect, but freely and honestly. The judgment, wisdom, and opinion of a loving wife are one of man's greatest assets. It saves him from many foolish mistakes, and it is this privilege and responsibility as a husband to receive the wise counsel of his wife, the wife who says quietly, 'Do whatever you think is best,' never offering an opinion, even when she sees that her husband is heading the family for trouble, is not being submissive, but foolishly servile." So if you see we're heading off a cliff, if we do this, you need to tell them, this isn't going to work out well. You need to tell them. So, ladies, it's time to step up to the plate. Don't just accept, you know, if it's a crazy, tell them it's crazy. All right? So, I'm blessed with somebody who has told me that from time to time. Maybe this won't work out well. Maybe you need to let me read this before you send that email out. Oh, okay. So anyway, so she must tell him her thoughts fully and make her case as strongly as she can, never laying aside her respect, but never concealing her honest doubts about a particular decision. When she has done this, she may let the decision rest with her husband, trusting God to give him good judgment. And fellas, if she's telling you this is crazy, wisdom tells you maybe it would be wise to listen. Maybe she sees something you don't. It takes a lot of faith to be submissive. Submissiveness is not a matter of outward form, but of inner attitude. And a wife can be a person of strong and even outspoken opinions and still be submissive to her husband's authority. She deep down respects him and is quite prepared and content for him to make and to carry out the final decision. But she's willing to state her opinion, and she should. Your wife is a compliment. Just as an example, in going on visits, we can be there visiting and talking to people, and my wife will observe something. She does. Sometimes it comes out as a question because my wife will ask questions that I won't. All right? Not to be offensive, but she sees something that I don't see, and she'll ask him the question. And it's usually a good question that's prudent to the matter we're discussing. And sometimes we will leave and she'll say, "Did you notice this?" "What? I didn't see that at all." But see, women have a certain intuition and insight that we don't have as men. God did not bless us that way. So that's why she's your complement to complement you. You fit together hand in glove, and she can help you with things you don't see. And be thankful that God has given her to you to help you in those ways. So in spiritual things, especially, a wise husband will welcome the counsel and opinion of his wife. And as I said, she often sees things you don't. As God laid things out the way he did, as far as roles for men and women, God is not taking away from a person. God has no intention of taking away anything from you, your skills, your abilities, or denying you in any way that is going to be hurtful to you. God has a reason for why he does things, and it goes a lot deeper than simply a husband is the head and the wife is to be submissive to her husband. We've talked about a number of things. We haven't covered everything. But it is my hope that in this sermon and in the sermon that I gave on January 28th, you will take heed to what was said and try to understand it and apply the biblical instructions on God's roles for men and women in your own lives. The fact is, as you do apply them, you will be blessed. You will be blessed, and it will strengthen your marriage relationship, and it will strengthen your family as we do things the way that God ordained.